All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Can you see it? Did you know
this? Golden checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the puck.
To the line, Hughes scores!
Yes, existence.
Here, like I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow, we should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What I'll have. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HockeySeason, capital H, capital S, at Zephyr Epic, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, epic.com. Check them out on all platforms and join them for weekly case breaks on Twitch. My name is David Quadrelli. I am joined, as always, by the man who built the place, Chris Faber, and we are going to be joined later on, Chris, this is all you're doing, by top prospect eligible for the 2021 NHL draft, Kent Johnson. North Van kid, probably going to go in the top 10, maybe top 5 of this draft. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, I can hear your jealousy in your voice that I'm talking to a guy from the Burnaby Winter Club and you're not going to be on the interview for it.
That's okay. I'll let you have this one. If you interview a Burnaby Winter Club goaltender, then I'll be really jealous.
No doubt. Hey, before we keep going anywhere, shout out to Zephyr Epic. Helped me get my hands on some beautiful cars. You see the picture I posted earlier this week on Twitter?
I did, yes.
Oh, man, some beautiful. A couple of rookie cards for Nils Höglander. And you know I've been investing in the Olja Levy rookie cards, man. And look at it now. Now that Jordy Benn's been traded, Olia Levy stock through the roof, baby. You know, I'm buying these cards for like $6 right now, getting Olia Levy rookie cards for like $5, $6. And I'm telling you, to the moon, baby. We're going to the moon with Olia Levy.
Well, you know, I think that's a good place to start. Let's talk about the trade deadline. We haven't recorded since then. On Monday, Canucks trade Adam Gaudette for Matthew Highmore. They trade Jordy Benn for a sixth-round pick. And then they do a little swap of picks and get Madison Bowie. Or Bowie. We don't know yet. We're going to figure it out. I think I'm going with Bowie. But Madison Bowie picked up from Chicago along with Matthew Highmore. Separate deals, but of course, those are the new players coming to the Canucks. Chris, just your initial thoughts on the Canucks trade deadline moves.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they gave up on Adam Gaudette too early still. I think that was pretty obvious in the emergency episode that we put out. I was pretty heated up all day on Monday when that was going down, and I still haven't really calmed down a ton from it. I still think that the Canucks gave up on a guy who still has a lot more potential for a guy that looks to be an AHL-NHL tweener. I mean, I talked to some people in Chicago. That's kind of what they said we're going to get here. I mean, this is a guy who I guess is going to be a better two-way player. That's kind of what a lot of people are saying about Highmore, but I don't want to write the guy off right off the bat, but it's hard for me to see that there was a lot of potential in Adam Gaudette, and to see a guy come in like this, he's going to have to be pretty impressive for me to think that this was a good deal. But, I, you know, like I said, and a lot of people have said a similar thing on Twitter, I was in a very similar boat with Tyler Mott, right? I mean, when Thomas Vanek couldn't get a draft pick and then ended up being Tyler Mott, I was thinking, wow, that's not a great return at all. That's a pretty bad return. I think that was something I was pretty vocal about at the time a couple of years ago. But maybe they see something in Highmore that I just haven't seen yet. Obviously, they had their eyes on him. I thought it was pretty interesting, and I asked him this actually in the media availability. I said, like, what's the relationship like with the Canucks? Do you remember them pursuing you when you were coming out of Major Junior? And he said, no. He's like, I don't remember talking to them at all or something. And, like, you know, that was something that he just mentioned, you know, maybe behind the scenes they were talking to him, but he didn't remember having any conversations with Jim Benning or the Vancouver Canucks. So found that kind of interesting, but obviously Jim Benning liked what he was doing in junior, and even though it's about what, 4 or 5 years, yeah, 5 years later now, he gets his man. So we'll have to see what Highmore can come in and do, but I find it very tough to think that he's going to make a bigger impact than Adam Gaudette would have made moving forward. So that was the big trade, right? And then I think the Canucks did a little tidy job trading Jordy Benn. Getting the sixth round pick is always good. Adding picks is great for this Canucks group. I think they've done a good job in late rounds with drafting players and you know, searching for high potential and taking big swings in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round. So I like the deal with Jordy Benn. And then Madison Bowie, Bowie. I think it's Bowie. I think you're right with Bowie.
I think it's Bowie.
Just, you know, trading down to grab him, trading down one draft pick to help them in expansion draft is interesting. I feel like Tyler Myers should be the guy that gets exposed in the draft. Like, you have to put out one defenseman for them to pick. I just thought it was going to be Tyler Myers, but this deal kind of, you know, it kind of extends into something that we talked about a few weeks ago, where it feels like Jim Benning's going to want to protect Tyler Myers, when really you look at the contract and it feels like Tyler Myers should be the guy that's exposed. But I think Jim Benning made this move so that he can expose Madison Bowie and keep Tyler Myers protected. So I don't know if that's a great move in the end anyways, because I really think Tyler Myers should have been exposed in the expansion draft, and this kind of is the writing on the wall that that's probably not going to happen now.
Well, this lets them meet the requirement for defensemen, which they didn't have before, right? And Bowie's also a UFA after this year, so even if Seattle were to take him, if it works out in the Canucks with the Canucks, then they could re-sign him if they wanted to. But yeah, this helps them meet the expansion kind of criteria. Like, they have to have 3D to protect, and I don't think they did before. So now they have that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I feel like you could have just been able to maybe actually give up some draft assets to get a player who's been consistently playing in the NHL. But you know what? Like, he kind of talked about it. Like, he was a great scorer coming out of junior, man. Like, a lot of people in Kelowna loved what they saw from him, and I've talked to a few people that have seen him play live in Kelowna in the junior, and, you know, there's a lot of plus side on him, but he just hasn't really been able to show it at the NHL. The read that I've gotten from people who have watched him a lot more than I is that he's not great in his own zone, and he doesn't create enough offense to be an offensive defenseman. So that's a tough spot to be in, but the Canucks need bodies right now, and I'm excited to see what he can bring. Like, I know that a lot of fans that liked him at the NHL level loved what he was able to do on the ice and certain things, but just seems like he hasn't really lived up to his draft capital. So we'll see what he can do with the Canucks. He's definitely going to get some ice time as we go through this crazy amount of games in the remainder of the season. But I'm open to see what Bowie can do for the Canucks, because they really need all hands on deck moving forward to the rest of the season here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a low risk pickup with and honestly, he can't be that much worse than Jalen Chatfield, right? You know what I mean? And Jalen Chatfield was getting some time in, and it was just, it's a shame because we were hearing all last season or all last offseason, like, Jalen Chatfield's going to come in, we think he's going to be a real good player, and then he just played himself out of the lineup, and it's just, you hope that Bowie can be more than that, right? And I think that's a pretty low bar, but that's kind of where it's at right now. And
yep.
There's a few things that we kind of need to touch on when it comes to that back end, Chris, because Quinn Hughes, reported by Matt Sakaris, was probably the worst Canuck hit by COVID, and he was the player that needed the IV treatment. That not only is that a little bit surprising, just given his age, but man, like, this guy plays like 24-plus minutes a night for this club, and they're going to need him going forward. It's just, like, I don't want to speculate, but man, you look at Jason Tatum with the Boston Celtics in the NBA, he's saying he needs an inhaler, and he had COVID in January, and he takes an inhaler before every game so that he can perform. But man, that's not an easy position for Quinn Hughes to be in.
No, I would be shocked to see the Canucks come back on Friday with all of their players, right? Like, there has to be, I would think there has to be a few of them from the regular roster that won't be there, right?
I think there's going to be like one or two, but it's not as many as people think. Like, people are seeing the COVID list right now and saying, oh my gosh, only 14 players are available. I don't think it's going to be significant. I think everybody's going to be back in time.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing was, like, I learned from my girlfriend, who's a nurse, about the IVs. I think I tried to explain this the other week on the show and did an absolutely horrible job of doing this. But, to get to the point of needing IVs is because he couldn't keep any liquids or food down, right? I mean, that's a tough spot to be in. And to think that he had to get on IVs, like, Quinn Hughes doesn't have a lot of muscle to lose at this point. And if he was at the point where he just couldn't keep down foods or couldn't get liquids into his body and required an IV, that's a really tough spot to be in. To think that that's just in the past 2 weeks and you're going to get him right back on the ice after going through COVID, that's a lot to ask from him. And you mentioned it. This is a kid who plays 24 minutes a game for the Vancouver Canucks, and he's going to be asked to do similar things when he does make his return, just from the way that the league is pushing these guys to get back to it. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about COVID. I'd actually like to just move forward and see what we can talk about on the ice. But, like, I just find it very, I don't even know the word to use, but it's kind of just, like, appalling that the NHL is trying to get these guys back on the ice this fast. Well, we don't know how their health really is right now. And you mentioned 16 guys still on the list, and yeah, they're about to be taken off likely tomorrow when we see them practice. But I get to this point in the season, and it's like I know that we need Canucks content to talk about on the show and to write about and everything of our jobs surround this team, but I don't think the health of the players is being put at the forefront right now, to be 100% honest. And it's unfortunate because man, the games that they're about to play, like, it's not like they're just coming back and playing hockey. They're coming back and playing in a condensed schedule that is going to test them so much, and I don't like it. I don't like it. It's just like kind of like a gross feeling covering this team right now, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, 19 games in 31 nights. Like, let that sink in. That's not easy to do, man. Like, this is going to be a grind for these guys. And, we're not going to get any crazy quotes from the players. We might from JT Miller, who's talking today at 2 o'clock, but Tanner Pearson met with media yesterday, and he was, kept his cards pretty close to his chest and was just saying, like, yeah, it's really tough, but it's our situation. We got to deal with it. And it's like, yeah, okay. That's a fair answer. But again, like, I think JT Miller might bring a little more heat today, but we'll see. We'll see if they put the muzzle on him or not. But I'm sure he has some opinions on the 19 games and 31 nights, just knowing him.
Yeah, what did you think about the Canucks and the way that, I mean, a lot of them were talking about it before COVID hit, that, like, playoff push was going to be the thing they were going for. Obviously, players are going to try and win every single game, but it felt like what they did at the deadline kind of, signaled that they were, I mean, I don't want to say sellers, because, like, they still, I don't think they gained a lot. If they were selling, they weren't selling very well, but, like, it felt like moving Jordy Benn out, moving Adam Gaudette out for a guy that might work in the future for this team. Like, It felt like they kind of are at the point right now where maybe they just accepted that the schedule is going to be too tough for them to make the playoffs. And I hope that that is like a shift in what the players that we might see moving forward, like Olealevi. Like, let's talk about that, because I think that, you know, I mentioned him off the top of the episode as the stock's through the roof. And that's because he's going to be a starter now, playing with Tyler Myers, likely on that third pairing. And I think that's a good spot. I think that's a good spot for both players. Like, I really do think that, yeah, Tyler Myers isn't going to be great in his defensive zone with Olealevi, but that's where Olealevi has his strength, right? When he's around the defensive zone and he doesn't have to move as much and defend as many rushes, like, that's where Olealevi plays his best hockey, I think, is around the crease and defending guys in the corners and having an active stick and being aware of passing lanes. That's Olealevi. That's the book on Olealevi, man. That's what I've seen the past 2 years in Utica, and that's what he's done at the NHL level, I think, so far. So I think that that pairing is actually going to be One of the things that I'm kind of excited for when the Canucks do get back on the ice is watching Olealevi get back to action and play with Tyler Myers, because I think both those players benefit from playing with each other.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's been a good mentorship from Tyler Myers for Olealevi. And I think they've both talked about it quite a bit, how Myers is kind of taking Olealevi under his wing. You know, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, I hope he isn't teaching him how to defend, but come on. Like, it's mentorship. It matters. It does matter. Come on. But I'm curious to see, where do you think Madison Bowie slots into this lineup? Like, I think he's the seventh defenseman on this team, but we were just talking about how maybe if someone's not ready to go on Friday, or even, you know, even if Travis Hamonic or Tyler Myers or Alex Edler or Nate Schmidt, anybody needs a night off, Madison Bowie can slot in. And that's kind of why adding a healthy body who hasn't had COVID yet kind of helps, you know what I mean? Like, that's that's good for this club, because you're gearing up for, you know, and it's not a playoff push. I'm not about to say they're gearing up for a playoff push and they need the healthy bodies. You're gearing up for 19 games and 31 nights. Those are still National Hockey League games, and they're going to be trying to win those games. So injuries are going to happen. These guys have not skated in 2 weeks. They're getting over this virus. Injuries are going to happen. And having extra bodies, especially on the back end, really matters for this club right now. That's why I think Bowie's actually going to get in some games. I think if they were healthy and not playing this many games, he wouldn't. But I think we're going to see him get into some games.
Yeah, I mean, you got five back-to-backs in the next 30 days. Once they start on Friday, I mean, you got five back-to-backs to finish off the season. You're going to see him at some point, right? Like, you're absolutely going to see him at some point. And not to mention, like, we talk about these guys recovering from COVID and coming back from it, but just looking at injuries that happen in hockey, they really go through the roof when you're playing this many games and this many nights. I mean, it's not just going to be the COVID injuries that keep these guys out of the lineup. It's going to be actual just regular hockey injuries, I think, that are going to happen too. So, no, a lot of players are going to end up getting their looks here. I don't know what the Canucks need to do to kind of move things around in the taxi squad, but Jack Rathbone should be on the taxi squad pretty soon. I mean, the Comets are playing a ton of games, but Jack Rathbone should be getting an NHL game at some point this season. I think he should be in a handful of them, to be honest.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree. 100%. And even if, okay, now this is like obviously worst case Ontario, but Quinn Hughes, we know he was hit hard by COVID. We know he's lost weight and is going to be presumably struggling when they come back. And you have all these games. He's kind of a guy that I've heard people say, I don't know if Jack Rathbone and Quinn Hughes can be on the same team at the same time, because they're such similar defensemen. And personally, I don't agree with that at all. I think you're allowed to have more than one good defenseman. But just in terms of the style they play, it's a good opportunity for Rathbone, if Hughes needs a night off, needs a couple nights off, to kind of just slot in and be Quinn Hughes. Like, he obviously wouldn't quarterback power play one. I think Nate Schmidt would get those duties, but, you know, power play two, he'd get some time on there. He'd still get some big minutes, and really, the games don't really matter. You know what I mean? And you're letting Quinn Hughes kind of get healthy, get back to where he needs to be, put on weight, get healthy again, and you're letting Jack Rathbone get some games in. So I could see that as something the club explores, calling up Rathbone and kind of letting him be Quinn Hughes 2.0, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's such a massive difference between getting, say Rathbone gets three games this year, right? It doesn't sound like a lot, and it probably wouldn't be very hard for the Vancouver Canucks to get him into three games, even if it's like, you know, the last week of May or the last week of the season in May, when they're like, You know, let's just call him up. The Comets don't have playoffs, so there's not really a playoff run for him to go through there. Let's just get him up here for the last 2 weeks and just get him, like, 3 games. I think that getting those 3 games or just getting any NHL experience is only going to benefit him next season when he wants to come in and crack the roster right out of camp. I think that coming in and having opening night be your first night in the NHL, a lot of pressure on you, a lot of pressure in training camp. I just think that you're taking away a lot of that pressure if you're just able to get him in for a couple games at the end of this year. And I think this is a spot that Cole Lynn's going to be in this season. This is a spot that Jack Rathbone's going to be in this season. With what Gadjevich is doing down in Utica right now, I think that he might be a guy that should be in the mix as well. So there's a lot of things that the Canucks can do for the remainder of the season to really help their young players kind of grow into NHL players and make the transition just a little bit easier. And I think the first one has to be Jack Rathbone getting a few games this year.
Absolutely. Another guy who needs a few games, Chris, and I think he will get a few games, Michael DiPietro. And you wrote about him today for Canucks Army. You know, this is a guy that I believe in. I think he's a good goaltender. Needs to get some games in. Needs to get some games in, man. We've talked about it so much. Getting work with Ian Clark is great, but nothing is going to happen if you're not practicing those things in game action and applying them in game action. That's what Michael DiPietro needs. I do think he's going to get it with the NHL club this year. I really do, because again, it all goes back to the 19 and 31 nights. By the way, my take, remember when I gave this take, Chris, that Thatcher Demko should play every game and Braden Holtby should only be playing back-to-backs? When I made that claim, we were looking at the schedule in the month ahead and we were like, oh, that might not age well. Sure enough, Demko plays every single game. Holtby only plays the second half of back-to-backs. That was the only time Braden Holtby played since I made that claim. So obviously he's going to play more now, but I am still standing by that claim. That was a good take. That was a good take.
Yeah. You mentioned only back-to-backs as one of your only good takes on goaltenders this year. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're bang on, right? Like, you were right, and I think that's what we're going to see for the remainder of the season. And you look at it, I mentioned it, there's going to be 5 back-to-backs for the Canucks in the remainder of the year. I find it tough to think that DiPietro is going to get into one of those, though. Like, without an injury to Holtby or Demko, I just don't think DiPietro gets into a game this year. I don't think that's in the cards for the Vancouver Canucks. And I wrote about the prospect report, and I wrote something in there that I was thinking about a lot. And I was like you get to a certain point where you're learning from a goaltender coach so much, right? Like, and you're working with a great one in Ian Clark. Like, it's a great spot for DiPietro to be in. But man, there's a certain point where you're learning more about, like, being a goaltender coach than actually being a goalie, I feel like. And I think we're at that point with DiPietro. Like, how much more, you know, film work can he do to really get better? How many more drills can he run before he's actually just at the point of becoming a better goalie coach for when he retires, right? I think, like, you have to put these things into play and see how they work, because Ian Clark, you know, everybody makes mistakes. I'm sure Ian Clark makes mistakes when dealing with his goaltenders as well. And right now he's not able to find out if all the changes that he's made to DiPietro's game, he needs to figure out which ones are mistakes. Because, yeah, he's the one of the best, if not the best, goaltender coach in the world. But I bet he would be the first to say that he's made mistakes throughout his career as well. And I bet at this point in his life, he's pretty aware of when he goes and he changes something about a game. And then he gets into the film and watches exactly, you know, what he wants to see from a goaltender. And is like, oh, you know what? We need to tweak that. That's something that we made a mistake overcompensating for, or something like that. Like, that's just, you need the game action. And I'm still at the point right now where it's like, I'm still so shocked that DiPietro isn't down in Utica, right? I mean, that's the spot where he would be getting into games. And I don't think that he's going to, I know that you think he's going to get games this year, but without an injury, I don't think DiPietro is getting into a game this season for the Canucks.
I think he does toward the end of the year. If schedule's still going to suck, and the Canucks are eventually going to be eliminated from playoff contention officially, I think he's going to get some games in. I do. And I think I'm going to press the organization on that a little harder than I had in the past if he doesn't get games in, because it's just, what's your reasoning? Like, I get you're still trying to win, but holy cow, like, the guy needs to play, and he still gives you a chance to win. It's not like anybody's telling you to put Archer Silovs in. It's Silovs. It's Shelovs, okay? Someone, Yerky21 on Twitter, told me after I said, oh, it's Silovs. No, that was just someone that said to me, oh, it's Silovs, and then was wrong. Yerky knows it's Shelovs, but I'm still going to say Silovs. So it's not like they're asking you to put, Silovs. They're not asking you to put Silovs in net, because obviously he's not NHL ready. I've said it numerous times. He still needs a lot of work. But DiPietro's as close to NHL ready as you can get. So get him at least one start. Like, let him try, man. Like, just see what you have in the kid after over a year, Chris, where the guy hasn't played. Like, get him into a game. It has to happen. I honestly think it will.
I think that the best chance, like, just from looking at the schedule, I got it here right in front of me, the best chance would be next Thursday or the Wednesday after that. The Canucks have a 4-game set against the Ottawa Senators to close out the month of April, with closing it out on the final, or the 29th against the Leafs. But you got back-to-backs on the 21st and 22nd against Calgary and then Ottawa. You know, maybe that Ottawa makes sense for a DiPietro start. And then when you close out the 4-game series against the Senators, it's a back-to-back where you play in Ottawa at 2:30 on Wednesday. And then on the Thursday, you end up playing in Toronto. So there's travel on that back-to-back. Not a ton, but there still is travel. You're going to end up playing on the Thursday against the Leafs. So I think that, you know, those back-to-backs at the start and the end of that 4-game set, that would make the most sense. So I think we could have our answer in the next 2 weeks if we do see DiPietro get into a game.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Is there anything else you want to add before we go to break and then to Kent Johnson? Because I'm trying to rack my brain. I think I've got one topic that I'll save for the second half of the show after Kent.
Yeah, I think that having Cole Lynn here in Vancouver, like, he should be in the lineup on Friday. You know, he's avoided COVID completely. He's been able to heal that broken bone in his face. The scar is going to still be there for sure. He's got a real bad cut. But man, Cole Lynn should be in the lineup on Friday against the Edmonton Oilers, and probably on Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. Just because, like, I'm pretty confident that these Canucks players that are going to be forced to play on Friday, really, like, there's a lot of them that aren't going to be fully healthy. And I think Cole Lynn right now is fully healthy, and he's knocking on the door of the NHL. It makes a ton of sense for me to see Cole Lynn in the lineup on Friday, and I think that should be happening for sure. He's not had to deal with COVID. He's been away from it the whole time. He's 100% healthy, and that's a guy that you need in the lineup. And it makes a lot of sense for him to go in, whether he's playing on the wing or playing at center. Like, Cole Lynn should be in the lineup on Friday, 100%.
I think you're right. I think we could see him make his debut on Friday. I absolutely do. We'll see, because we're recording a show on Saturday. Well, I guess we'll record it Friday after the game. Should we post an episode on Sunday? Because there's a back-to-back Friday and Saturday. Should we just post an episode on Sunday instead?
Man, I don't know.
That'd be the first time we break the schedule.
That ain't Canucks convo, you know, regularity. But, you know, with back-to-backs,
think you have to. Well, this isn't regular anymore. The NHL went and changed the schedule. We have to change our. Like, we have to adapt, Chris.
I don't like it. I feel dirty. I feel like I'm cheating on someone doing this.
Okay. Let's get the break.
We'll see. It is four. It's a 4 o'clock game on Saturday. So maybe we record right after and we put it out right after. You know,
okay,
then we don't.
So still,
you know, we
Saturday.
Don't cheat on our Saturday. We put it out Saturday night. We'll see what happens. We'll have a discussion off air about this, but. Yeah, why don't you throw the interview? I'm very excited for this one and for people to hear this one.
Absolutely. We'll come back on the other side of it, but we are going to throw to some advertisements and an interview with top prospect Kent Johnson from North Van Burnaby Winter Club. Kent Johnson. Keep it locked, keep it loaded on the Canucks Conversation.
All right. You guys all know about Parallel 49 beer from our commercials here on the show, and now we have a new announcement. Hello, Peach Bod. That's right. It's not all about the Beach Bod this summer. It's all about the Peach Bod this summer. This one's an interesting one, folks. A sparkling peach ale. So you're getting a beer with peach flavor on it, but it's also high in carbonation. It's definitely a different one, and I highly recommend going out there and giving it a try if you're into a peach-flavored beer. And that's something, you know, I'm pretty damn into. I got to get out and try it myself pretty soon here. I will report back on the show about this. So go out there and try the Peach Bod for yourself from Parallel 49 Beer. Check them out on Instagram, at Parallel49, as in the numbers, and then beer, that's Parallel 49 Beer. And be sure to check out their website for more information about how you can get beer through Uber Eats. That's right, through those food delivery apps. Uber Eats, you can get your delivery from Parallel 49 Beer. Be sure to check out their website, parallel49brewing.com. That's parallel, the numbers 49brewing.com.
The pandemic and a slow economy are making it tough on a lot of people to find steady, good-paying work. But one industry is bucking that trend. Construction companies are hiring and need more workers than ever before. Upload your resume to icba.ca and get noticed. With more than 3,000 employers on our ICBA team, our employment network can connect you to businesses crewing up for the 2021 construction season. Trades jobs that pay well, offer excellent benefits, invest in safety training, and give a firm career foundation. Check out icba.ca/jobs.
Moving on along, we want to throw a big shout out to our friends over at Mike's Hard Lemonade and Neutral Vodka as well. Couple of new releases from each of these guys right now. Mike's Hard has released the new White Freeze. It's here from the 90s to freeze your summer with refreshing cream soda flavor, as well as Neutral Vodka launching their new juice line with their regular vodka sodas now including fruit juice flavors to spice it up a little bit. I know I'm into that because I love my sweeter drinks. So be sure to check out the new Mike's Hard White Freeze, as well as the brand new Neutral Juiced series. And if you're of legal drinking age, head on down to the local BC liquor store and pick yourself up a six-pack of one of these new drinks. All right, guys, joining us now, future draft pick, likely in the top 10. That's the spot where the Vancouver Canucks might be picking this upcoming draft. Joining us now, back home from the University of Michigan, Kent Johnson. Kent, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Very excited to get you on here. A local Vancouver prospect here, growing up in North Van. So I got to ask first question, have you been growing up as a Canucks fan throughout your life?
Yeah, of course. I was here for the days when we had those awesome teams and those cup runs and, big Sedin fans. So yeah, it was pretty awesome growing up back then.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, different times now, but those were some glory days. You must have been, 10 years old at the time for the cup runs?
Yeah, I think I was around there, and yeah, those are some great memories. So the city was pretty electric back then.
Absolutely. So what was it like for you watching games? Because when we were in the cup run, I was about 19 years old. But you as a 10-year-old, what was it like just watching those playoff runs? What can you remember from those days?
Yeah, I just remember a lot of Sedinery, obviously, and those guys were so awesome. And I kind of just loved that those teams and all the guys, Burrows, Bieksa, and Luongo. I just idolized all those guys. So it was some really fun teams to watch for sure. And I went to a couple of those playoff games that Cup Run year, and really special games. I just remember how electric the barn was, and just so much fun.
Well, that's awesome to hear, man. Do you have a favorite memory of attending a Canucks game growing up? Was it during that playoff run, or do you have another game in mind that was pretty fun to go to?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I'm 99% sure that I was at the game where Burrow scored, and you think you should be able to remember that pretty easily, but it was such a blur, so I'm pretty sure I was at the Dragon Slayer game when Burrow scored that goal.
No way. We must have been in the arena at the same time then, if you remember that one. That's that was quite the moment. I mean, it's hard to think of a bigger goal in Canucks history, really.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
Well, that's cool to hear. And then, obviously, you grew up here playing in the BCHL. I kind of want to just ask about that a little bit because, the year that you first came into the BCHL, what was that adjustment like for you coming out of the Burnaby Winter Club?
Yeah, it was a great adjustment. Coach Tambellini did an awesome job with me just making it a really easy adjustment. And, I had some great veteran linemates to start off the year, and Braden Tuck and Levi Glassman. And, it was pretty smooth. I think really early on, I was just kind of settling in and getting most of my points on the power play. And then as the year got going, I kind of was able to do it more at even strength. And then the playoffs, I found I was obviously a totally different player than the start of the year, being so young. So, it was just a great rookie year for me, and had a great team there.
It must be pretty cool now to evolve into an NCAA player and just see, how many guys are coming out of the BCHL. What do you have to say about that league and the players that they're able to develop into NCAA players?
Yeah, no, for sure. I was, my brother played in the league the 3 years before me, and then I played for 2 years. So kind of just seeing the league for 5 years, and I think it was getting better and better every year. And, obviously, this year has been pretty tough with COVID and everything. But, I think the league is definitely on the rise, and it's a great option.
And I'm sure coming out of the BCHL, you had quite a bit of offers. What kind of made you decide to go with Michigan?
I just really loved the coaching staff and the hockey history there when they're recruiting me, and how good the school was academics wise too, and the children of Yost and everything. So it was just a great fit.
Yeah, I feel like if Michigan comes knocking, you don't really say no often, eh?
Yeah, no, for sure. There's a lot of great schools out there, but Michigan's definitely right at the top of the list.
That's awesome, man. And then you jump into that lineup, and there's three what looks like to be top 10 draft picks with yourself, Owen, and Matt as well. What was that kind of like? Like, it almost felt like, I don't know if you're a big basketball fan, but it feels like, you know, these guys that go into the NCAA in basketball and end up just playing 1 year and being these super freshmen. Did you guys kind of get that vibe between the three of you going into this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, hockey, maybe it's a little different, but, you know, it's different where it's not like you can just carry a team, like three guys or anything. Like, it's way more of a sport where you need all 20 guys, I feel like. So a little bit different, but some of that, yeah, I mean, there was definitely like a lot of attention, and it was a pretty special group to be around, and just like learning from those guys every day in practice. And, you know, like first week on campus, like pretty eye-opening how good all these guys were. So yeah, it was really cool.
Absolutely. What was the biggest difference, do you think, going from the BCHL to the NCAA? And I mean, you guys are in the Big Ten division, a lot of tough opponents in that division as well, or in that conference, I guess you call it. But, you know, what was the biggest jump, do you think, and the thing that was most difficult for you going from BCHL to NCAA?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything's just a bit better. Like, I don't know if there's one thing I can really particularly put a spot on. Like, obviously the goalies are better, and the defense, and I think, yeah, everything just happens faster. So, you know, obviously there's a learning curve that needed to be had for me jumping leagues. But overall, like, it definitely was a bit of a smooth transition, I guess. And the BCHL prepared me well for college, I think.
Absolutely. It's got to help when you put up 4 points in your first NCAA game, though, too, eh?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a pretty crazy opening night. I mean, definitely got some good bounces, too, to get four. But, yeah, I mean, it was a fun game, and our team was really ready.
Absolutely. And, you know, to kind of jump into that first weekend that you have there against the back-to-backs against Arizona State, I guess, you know, getting the 4 points in the first one's great, and then putting up the goal in your second game. Did it just kind of feel like, you know, after putting up 5 points in your first two games, you're like, wow, I definitely belong here? Did it kind of feel like that after the first weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, whether I got 0 points or five, like, I knew I kind of belonged just from, you know, practicing for 2 months. Like, I knew I was a good player at that level, and everything I'd done in the summer, like, it wasn't going to be, you know, it wasn't really much of a question to me. But, yeah, I mean, definitely, like I said, I got some good bounces that first weekend, and, you know, it was nice to get the ball rolling early and, you know, get those off my back early.
And I guess just going to Michigan, I mean, we see so many NHLers come out of there, and just, you know, the great coaching staff, kind of just the legend of Michigan hockey. What did it kind of feel for you to be in that first weekend and be wearing the Michigan jersey? Was it kind of surreal just kind of getting on the ice and seeing what it was all like?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely surreal. Like, even without fans, like, just like playing in Yost is so special, and just knowing all the history and all the great players who have worn the M before you, like, yeah, it's something I definitely desired, and to live that out is pretty cool.
That's awesome, man. Well, that's good to hear. And I mean, the first kind of big rivalry game from a lot of the guys that I've talked to that went to Michigan, the Michigan State game, and you come into that one and you put up 5 points in that game. What was clicking that game for you? Just felt like everything was going in, or what?
Yeah, I mean, again, like, obviously, like, I played really well, but again, like, you know, like, sometimes when you're getting assists, like, you know, it has a lot to do with other factors outside of how you're playing, like, you know, whether you pass to a guy, whether he scores or whatnot. So, you know, it obviously, like, some law of averages that happened that game. But, I mean, I think it was right after the Christmas break, if I remember correctly. And yep. I think, like, Christmas breaks have always been good for me to just kind of reset and work on some stuff I want to work on. And I felt like, you know, I had a lot of jump in my step. So, yeah, that was a really fun game.
Yeah, and I mean, after that Christmas break, you kind of touched on it there. Was there certain things you worked on about scoring? Because it felt like the goals kind of went up after the Christmas break for you.
Yeah, I don't know what – I can't really say anything scoring-wise, but I worked on, like, just getting a little faster during the Christmas break. I did a lot of – like, I didn't really skate for, I think, 10 days, and I was doing, like, a lot of kind of sprints and quick feet stuff, so trying to just get faster. And then I think the goals was once the – you know, like, obviously two in the first 10 games, I think, wasn't really what I was looking for, but they started to go in more after the Christmas break, so that was nice.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think one of the things that we hate to do, kind of as, like, prospect evaluators, is, like, make a comparable for a player. And I'm just curious, is there a player that you kind of just, like, try to groom your game around, or maybe someone you watch growing up and you're like, I kind of want to play that play style?
Yeah, I think not one particular player for sure, but a lot of guys I try to take a lot of stuff from, you know, like one Pedersen here in Vancouver, and Patrick Kane and Mitch Marner. I love a lot of great guys in the league right now that I try to take stuff from.
Yeah, and how do you kind of like find that evolution of players? Like, what are certain things? I guess maybe we could like, you know, use Mitch Marner as an example. What's one of the things in his game that you kind of just say like, wow, I'd like to improve in that when you see a player in the NHL doing things at such a high level?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Marner might be the best in the league at delays entering the zone, and like he's really comfortable in the middle of the ice entering the zone, and that's something like I really try to do. Like if I can get the middle of the ice and then delay for my teammates and then dish it, like that's something I love watching him do. And you know, like Kaner too loves the delays. He's on the wall a little bit more than Marner maybe when he's doing those. But yeah, those are two big things I try to take from them. And like Pettersson, like trying to work on my shot to be a bit more like him. So yeah, just a lot of different things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good shot to try and copy from what we see here in Vancouver. I guess what I wanted to ask was one of the big strengths, it looks like, in your game has been your skating, and it looked like it improved from the BCHL to the NCAA just from watching some tape on you. Is that something you kind of focused on as you were making a jump to a more difficult league to play in?
Yeah, I think like I've always had pretty good edge work, and that's something I worked a ton on. And you know, like I'm a skinnier guy right now, and like obviously I'm just trying to get like a lot more power in my legs, and I think that'll help me get quicker foot speed, because like in a straight line in college at the start of the year, like I definitely wasn't one of the faster guys out there. So I want to make sure like that's something next year that improves even more. So yeah, I think you can always try to get, anyone can try to get more explosive and a little bit better foot speed.
And how helpful are the coaches there at Michigan? I mean, your guy is going to get drafted very high in the NHL draft. You know, definitely an NHL future for you. What's it kind of like dealing with the coaches, like to try and get you to the next level there at Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, they're really great and supportive. You know, as much as they want to win at Michigan, they want us to develop too. So just finding that balance, and yeah, they do a great job.
That's awesome here, and I know a lot of Canucks fans will be excited if they see your name pop up being a local guy from Vancouver. So I kind of want to ask, like, you know, a lot of people listen to this show are from the BC and from Vancouver area. Can you give us your favorite restaurants that you've grown up in the area, and you hopefully should know some restaurants here?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the main ones, like just Cactus Club and like Browns are the ones I love. Like, so yeah, like, I mean, I also, my friends are go to play spike ball in the summer, and then we normally go to Vera Burger after that. So those are some ones we like.
Okay, you're keeping it simple. You're not going off the board then.
No, yeah, pretty mainstream restaurants, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's good. You know, seems like a good hockey answer there. And I mean, you know, moving forward, next year at Michigan seems like it could be a good opportunity for you guys. Did you feel like it was a pretty young team this year? I mean, a lot of the goals came from some pretty young players, whether it was freshman or sophomore. Do you think that there's a lot of room to grow for this Michigan team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think so. That, you know, like when freshmen take the leap to sophomore, I think it's a, you know, you can see how much that helps a lot of the time. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot of improvement for our team, you know, like any team. But, yeah, I think the sky's the limit for our team.
And since you're on a Canucks podcast here, I got to ask about your teammate there at Michigan, Jacob Truscott. Can you give us a scouting report on him from a guy who's on the ice with him so much?
Yeah, well, I was really happy when the Canucks drafted him. I know he really likes Vancouver and the way they play. And, yeah, I mean, I just think, like, for him, he's a guy that you could see his development really skyrocket. You know, he loves hockey so much, and he works so hard. And, yeah, he's obviously, you know, got some really good offensive tools. And, you know, I think this year he proved that as a freshman he played a really responsible two-way game as well. So, you know, when he gets more opportunity and some power play time and whatnot, like, he can really – have that offensive game too. So I'm really excited to watch his future.
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of people are very excited about the Vancouver Canucks future as well with the young core. What do you think of some of the young players that are making such a big impact on this Vancouver Canucks team right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's just fun to watch, really. Like, you know, the bubble last year was, you know, kind of they were playing their best hockey, and you know, like Pettersson and Hughes and Besser and Horvat, you know, so much fun to watch those guys. So I think definitely the future is bright.
Absolutely. And now after a year of playing NCAA, I mean, in your 18-year-old season before you got drafted, what does it kind of put your mindset into to think about how close you are to being an NHL player? I mean, you're going to get drafted very high in the summer here for sure. Do you think that you're close to taking that step to the NHL, or are you going to be back for another NCAA season, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's something right now I'm like not really trying to think much about. I mean, I could see, you know, either way, there's still a lot I got to work on, you know, that I'm working on every day right now. So a lot of stuff to worry about before making a decision like that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of touched on it that the Canucks are going to be picking pretty high. Being a guy from North Van, you know, if you see Jim Benning walking up to that stand and call your name, what would that feeling kind of feel like for you?
Yeah, I mean, that would be all I could ever dream of as a kid. So, you know, living that out would be pretty insane and, you know, something I almost don't want to get too excited about, I guess, because, you know, if it didn't happen, you know, like, I don't know, it's just so much to think about right now. And, you know, I kind of just don't want to get too invested in that dream right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just, you see so many guys from the Toronto area get picked by the Maple Leafs and it's like a dream come through. It's like, man, we haven't had a lot of Vancouver guys selected by the Canucks recently. It would be a pretty fun story to see you be the first in a long time here.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, just looking back on your season, what were some of the moments that stuck out for you in your first year at Michigan that were just kind of things that you're going to hold on to for the rest of your life, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, like our team had some really good big wins. And, you know, like one I can think of right now is just a win against Minnesota on the road. That kind of like guaranteed us, I think, getting into the tournament. That was a huge one. And, you know, we kind of rolled Ohio State in the first game of the Big Ten playoffs. So that was a big one. And, you know, like the lost, the last game losing to Minnesota was obviously, you know, not the outcome you'd want, but I mean, just playing that game and getting that experience for our team, I think was huge. And, you know, just so much fun hockey in the Big Ten. So it was awesome.
Yeah. I could just imagine like getting, you know, playing in front of no fans must've been strange. If you're back at Michigan next year, just from guys that have been there before, what have you kind of heard about what the fans are going to be like if you are playing at home in Michigan?
Yeah, no, I've heard it's just insane, and I've never got to be at a game there, but from videos and whatnot I've seen, like, it's just, there's nothing really else like it in college hockey. It's just the atmosphere is something totally different. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully that's something I get to experience, or, you know, that'd be so much fun.
Absolutely. And now that you're in the off season, is there one part of your game that you're wanting to focus on a little bit now that you've seen what NCAA hockey is like?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think one specific part, but definitely a lot of parts. I think some big things are, you know, getting a bit more explosive in my skating, and then just my one-timer too. Like, I didn't score any one-timer goals this year, and I think, like, with the way the game's played right now in the NHL, there's so many one-timer goals. So if I can develop a Pettersson like one-timer, you know, like that would help me out a lot for sure. So I'm going to work on that a lot.
Man, if I had a Pettersson one-timer, I'd probably be in the NHL too. So I think we can all kind of strive for that one. You mentioned before we started recording this that you're during your quarantine now, returning to BC. So what are you keeping busy with, man? Is it just a lot of Netflix? Are you playing some video games, just hanging out? Like, what's keeping you busy over the last week or so?
Yeah, I mean, I've got my school, so that takes up some hours for sure. And then, you know, just been hanging out and, you know, shooting pucks and working out. So that's been kind of keeping me busy too. And then, yeah, a little bit of video games and Netflix, to kind of pass the time in the evening more so.
Okay. So I need a recommendation then for people from Netflix. What's kind of a sleeper that people are sleeping on from Netflix?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could give you one. Like, I'm not really a sleeper guy. I don't really watch so much Netflix that I get into sleepers. I kind of just watch the mainstream stuff. So, like, the only show I'm watching right now is Suits.
Okay, that's a good one. I've heard a lot of people actually recommend that one. I haven't checked it out yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, that's good stuff. I guess we'll just kind of get a couple of quick questions to kind of wrap this thing up if you're all good with this. I just wanted to ask, like, what's your favorite comedy of all time for movies?
Yeah, I mean, I love any movie that Will Ferrell's in, basically, but... yeah, so anything from him. I mean, I like Step Brothers a lot.
Are you a big quote guy for movies? Like, do you like to drop those in the locker room?
Not really. Like, I don't really remember the quotes too well. I mean, like, obviously some of the mainstream ones, like, yeah, everyone knows, but I wouldn't be the one dropping the quotes, but I definitely recognize it and appreciate it if someone else did.
For sure. Scariest movie you've ever seen?
Scariest, I don't know. I don't really watch too many scary movies, but I think the last one I watched was It, so probably that one.
Okay, yeah, that's too scary for me, so you're above me for sure for a level. Favorite breakfast cereal, if you had to go with a sweet one?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had cereal in so long, but like when I was younger and we'd go to like hotels, like it's probably the only time I'd get to have like the really sugary ones, so like Fruit Loops I really liked.
Okay. That's a pretty good one. That's not a bad one. I think we had Jacob on the show. Before the season started, and we kind of got him under Reese's Puffs. I feel like that was a conversation that we had with him. I guess the final thing I just kind of wanted to wrap up with you, Kent, was, first of all, appreciate you jumping on the show and wish you best of luck in the NHL draft in the off season here. I mean, now that you've kind of gotten to this point in your career, being 18 years old and getting to the draft, like, does it just feel like you're almost just in a waiting game right now? I mean, you're not going to be playing any more hockey. You've kind of done all you can do. Are you just kind of in a weird state right now, just waiting to see who kind of picks you at the NHL draft?
I think I don't really see it that way. Like, I mean, obviously, yeah, like part of me wishes the draft was tomorrow, and I'm pretty curious to see what happens, I guess. But there's a lot of life to live for me and a lot I can do. So I don't really think I've fallen victim to hockey so much that I'm just waiting around and doing nothing with my life until then, I guess. So just finding a way to just enjoy it and, get better at a lot of different stuff.
Well, that's awesome, man. That's really good to hear. And, it sounds like you're keeping busy off the ice, and hopefully get you out of quarantine here pretty soon so maybe you can get outside and enjoy a little bit of this beautiful weather we've been having lately.
Yeah, no, for sure. I might have to get in the backyard here. It's pretty nice today.
Absolutely. Well, Kent, appreciate you doing this. I hope your name's up there when the Canucks walk up there and make their selection. It'd be pretty awesome to get a local guy selected for this team. So appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck moving into the draft and whatever comes in the future for you, man. Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris.
All right, and a massive thank you to Kent Johnson and, of course, all of our sponsors on the Canucks Conversation podcast. Chris, I wanted to talk to you about one interesting quote that was said on the People Show on Sportsnet 650 by Elliot Friedman yesterday, actually, hinted that he thinks Jim Benning's coming back, and he's always thought that Jim Benning's coming back, and he also said that the Canucks aren't looking to spend big on a coach or a GM, meaning the writing's on the wall. Like Travis Green's gone after this year because he's due for a big pay raise, and he's going to get it somewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, what does that mean for the Vancouver Canucks moving forward, right? I mean, this is the guy who's developed some of these young players and NHL players right off the bat. He's put them into roles where they can have success, and man, it seems bass ackwards to keep Jim Benning and let Travis Green walk. But I think the days go by, and I think we get closer and closer to realizing that if there's no extension for Travis Green and Ian Clark, I think this team takes a huge drop. Honestly, just from what you're going to see on the ice, I think it's going to be pretty hard to fill what Travis Green has been able to do with this Canucks team. We know what kind of media pressure there is here in Vancouver. That's a tough thing for a coach to deal with, and I think Travis has done a pretty good job of it in his time as the Canucks GM or head coach. But yeah, to hear that Jim Benning's going to be back next year, I don't think that makes a lot of Canucks fans happy, because it felt like this was going to be the final year, right? Like, one way or another, it felt like this was going to be the last time we had Jim Benning as a general manager. But Elliot Friedman talks to a lot of people. He also backs up Jim Benning pretty hard. I think a lot of Elliot's information that we hear might be coming from Benning, right? Like, I feel like he might be talking to Jim Benning. The way that he talks about Jim Benning and the situation in Vancouver, the general manager, whether it's on Hockey Night in Canada or on 31 Thoughts or even just, on Twitter, I don't know. I feel like his source in Vancouver might be like Jim Benning or someone very, very close to Jim Benning who he tries to put a pretty positive light on. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be blown away to see Jim Benning back next year, but I still find it tough to, if this wasn't a COVID year, I think Jim Benning's gone. But because of this, I think it might extend him for another year to see what he can do in Vancouver. And to think that we're going to go into free agency again with Jim Benning, and Jim Benning's going to be the one signing these contracts for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, like, I don't like that much for the Vancouver Canucks moving forward. And to compound that with potentially losing Travis Green and likely losing Ian Clark, that's not a big win for the organization for me, but it is also a way for Francesco Accolini to save some money, I think.
Yeah. The one thing I want to add is, if there's one thing that Benning's done pretty well, other than drafting or whatever, and Sham Charon, that's all I'll say on that. But the one thing that I think he can be credited for is these deals he signed Bo to, Brock, and the players that he should be giving money to.
Right.
He's pretty good at lowballing them, it seems like. So, everything has to get approved by ownership right now, right? And with those deals, I feel like they're obviously going to be bridge deals because the Canucks aren't, it's just not going to be long term. They think they can get it done in the 13 to 15 million range. I don't hate that. Like, it'd be great to get them signed long term, but it's just not the reality of it. And I mean, the players probably don't want to sign long term anyway, given how there's going to be such a salary cap increase in the next probably 4 years. You know, they probably don't want to sign on for too long term. They probably are going to be looking for that bridge deal. So I think they're both going to get 3-year deals, but that's just my opinion. I'm not reporting that from anything. But yeah, I don't know, Chris. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I saw one person float out the idea, and it actually made me think of somebody that could get hired because they're not looking to spend a lot of money is Mike Babcock. Because Babcock's volunteering at the University of Saskatchewan right now, and he's still getting paid by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, you know, fits the old boys club, you know, maybe they bring in Mike Babcock, and he's the new coach of the Canucks. Just, again, he'd probably take a discount just to coach in the NHL again and, you know, have one more crack at it. I just, like, selfishly, just imagine us going from interviewing Travis every day on Zoom to all of a sudden having to talk to Mike Babcock every day. Like, that'd be different. That'd be different, and that's all I'll say in case Babcock does get hired here. I don't want him to hold this against me.
Well, wherever you saw that take, I hate that, by the way. That's a horrible idea. You might as well bring in Bill Peters to be the assistant coach while you're at it. Like, that would be one of the worst things you could do for a team with a budding young core that, you know, yes, makes yep. so much sense to have a young coach like Travis Green, who really is starting to grow into his own and has proven that when you have to step up your coaching level in the playoffs, looks like he did a pretty good job of it in the one time that we've seen Travis Green go on a little bit of a playoff run with this team. So, I think Jim Benning wants Travis Green to be his guy, but like you said, it feels like not only does Jim Benning have to ask permission from Francesco Aquilini to make moves right now, but I just get the sense that Aquilini's, you know, not only just, you know, being asked for approval, but I think he's making some decisions right now. It's really hard to not believe that that's what's going on behind the scenes right now with the Canucks, and to see the not only the moves that have been made, but more the moves that haven't been made, right? Like, I feel like a lot of decisions are coming down from the owner right now, and that's a bad spot to be in, I think, for an NHL organization, and specifically here in Vancouver, with not only a fan base but a media group that's so dialed into every little tidbit that comes out of the Vancouver Canucks organization and things that are being leaked out of the organization. Like, it just feels like there's a bad disconnect right now, and I think it starts at the top, to be 100% honest, and I think that's where some of the decisions or non-decisions are coming from right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Well, I think we can close out this episode now. Chris, do you have anything you want to add before we get to the prospects report and close out, or just go to prospects report?
No, let's just dive into it. The thing that I wanted when the Comets were coming back to play was, like, there's a few stories that I wanted to see for sure. Like, was Cole Lynn going to keep playing? Was Rathbone going to continue to have success? Rathbone's continued to have success. He's got 8 points in 7 games now for the Comets. But Jonah Gadjevich, like, what more does he have to do to get called up to the NHL and get a shot? He's got 11 goals in 12 games right now. He does something that you don't really see on the Vancouver Canucks, and that's a guy who dominates the net front presence. I mean, this is a guy who can probably hop right into an NHL second power play unit as the net front presence. Like, that's a spot where he'll immediately have success. To see what he can do at 5-on-5 would be interesting. Trent Cole kind of mentioned it yesterday that, you know, Jonah's right now, like, what he's doing on the power play is excellent, and, you know, 3 power play goals definitely says that, but, like I said, he's got 11 on the season. You know, he's got 8 goals at 5-on-5 in 12 games for the Utica Comets. That's pretty damn impressive for a guy that a lot of people see him scoring these goals right in front of the net, and they're like, oh, you know, it's just because he's on the power play, he's doing a lot of things, but the guy crashes the net so hard, has such a good stick around the crease, and he's scoring at 5-on-5. You know, like, he's absolutely scoring at 5-on-5 in the AHL, and I know that the AHL is a little bit watered down this year for sure. It was something that Trent talked to me about last week when I interviewed him, was like, you know, every team's missing basically their first line, every team's basically missing their top pairing, and, you know, their top goalie as well. But even still, I think Jonah Gadjevich would have had an opportunity to play on the Comets' first line and or even in the top 6 for sure. And the production has been there. It absolutely has been there. And he's got a confidence right now in him that's so great to see. And like I said, and I wrote about this earlier in the week when I did the prospect report on Gadjevich, like, he's just bigger and stronger than everyone in the AHL. Like, no one can move him around. The first goal that he scored in last night's game for the Comets was just, like, him completely just backing down, basically, like, you're boxing out in a rebound. Like, that's what he does. He does a great job of getting his body into the right spot, but not only his body, but, like, having his stick be in an area where the puck might rebound to or where he's open for a pass. And the Canucks just don't have that in their lineup. I think that Jonah's worked his way on this Comets roster this year to earn a spot to get an NHL shot this year. And it doesn't have to be a ton, right? Like, it just has to be him sliding into a fourth line role for the Canucks. Like, I look at Highmore coming in. I look at, you know, Travis Boyd being here, and I look at some of these other players that they've brought in. And to me, I would way rather see Gadjevich get a shot than some of these guys, just to see what he looks like at the NHL level. Like, there was times in yesterday's game where I was watching and I was like, There was some getup to Gadjevich's skating, right? Like, he's definitely not like a burner. He's definitely not fast and probably still below average speed overall in general at the NHL level. But there's definitely some things that have improved in his game more than just his scoring ability. Like, he's really improved overall as a player. And I just think he deserves a shot at the NHL as much as really almost any other prospect in the organization. I think Cole Lynn deserves it ahead of him, maybe just because of what he's shown in his development over the parts of four seasons in Utica. But Gadjevich is like the next man up for me. I've been banging the drum, I think, on Sven Berchi a lot over the past few months. But right now, like, I think Gadjevich has kind of jumped him in that. And I think he would be the second forward that I would like to see from Utica's starting roster earlier in the season. Like Cole Lynn should go and he should get his opportunity. I think he's going to have some success. But what Gadjevich is doing, I just love to see him go around and bang the body on a fourth line and see if he can go to the net and get some dirty goals like he's been doing all year in Utica. So just my little rant on Gadjevich. I think he should get an opportunity at some point this season. If not, you know, he's going to come into next year and really try and earn a spot on this Canucks roster. And I think if he's able to adjust his game to be an impact player on the fourth line, like, absolutely there's a spot for him in the lineup. If he's able to keep up to the NHL speed, if he's able to still go to the dirty areas and get those goals, and if he's still bigger and stronger than a lot of guys in the NHL, which I think he is, like, this dude packed on a lot of weight, not just weight, but, like, a lot of muscle, a lot of different muscle than he had last year, and it's clear to see at the AHL level right now, and he's deserved a shot to get up to the NHL and see what he can do. So, I don't know. Free Gadjevich, man. Let's see what he can do at the NHL level and get him up here in a fourth line role and do something for the Canucks.
Free Gadjevich. That's a great place to end this show on. Chris, good episode, buddy. It's going to be interesting to see what the Canucks do in their first back-to-back. I'm not expecting much, personally, so we will we'll have to see what happens. But to everybody listening, thank you so much. A huge thank you once again from both Chris and myself to Kent Johnson, Burnaby Winter Club alumni, for coming on the show, and of course to all of our sponsors. Thank you so much for listening to the Canucks Conversation.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.